and we create a direct mapping from things in our main memory to things in our cache. And we said, well, sometimes this particular slot will be filled, and so we came up with a creative solution. We came up with a creative solution for this, which was to add ways. So we added extra ways in our cache, and so if something had got set to one of these sets and it was full, we would simply hop over and stick it in the next set. And does anybody remember how we distinguished between these sets? Yeah, so we can index into the particular cache by using the set index bits. But when we have e-way associative, 0 through e, how do we determine whether or not the hit that we're interested in is in the first, second, or eth way?
The tag.
The tag, yeah. So we can look at the tag bit, and then we can use that to decide. And then you can think of a fully associative cache as where everything is in one set. So I clear this. And so you can think of a fully associative cache as where everything is in one set. So just to kind of visualize that, you can imagine one set here. And the only thing that's distinguishing each of the elements in the cache is the tag. And particularly, there are no index bits. So we just have tag bits and offset bits. And so these can sometimes be a little bit more complicated to build because you'll have to have lines checking each of the tags and gates where you compare them to the tag IDs to all of your gates here and so on. So you have this kind of extra overhead for fully associative caches. And so that's something to kind of keep in mind as we go through the rest of the lecture. And so last time we looked at some of the formulas for calculating it for determining the number of set, index, and offset bits for a direct map cache. And so I'll make this pen a little thinner so we can get more precision. So for an e-way cache where we have address bits from 0 to M, and instead of a single direct map cache setup, we have multiple ways. The key thing to note is that the number of set bits doesn't change because they would address a single set across both ways. The number of offset bits, or for the block size, doesn't change because each way is identical. And when we're indexing, we would index into both ways simultaneously. And so one of the biggest changes is that we've increased scaled the cache size by E. So the way we calculate our number of set bits is still the same, log base 2 of the sets that we chose, and our number of offset bits is going to be, offset bits is going to be log base 2 of what we decide on our block size. And the tag bits are still going to be the same. They're going to be our memory bits minus our set bits plus our offset bits. And the only thing that changes is the size of the cache. It gets scaled by E for the number of ways. So any questions on this? Okay. And so let's go through this exercise. These are some cache block size values from Professor Reese's computer desktop. And so here you have the total cache, I'll highlight this so we can see it. Here we have the total cache size. This is the number of ways. And here is the block size for each way. And so the idea is to calculate the number of tag, index, and offset bits that you need for this L1 cache. So I'll give you guys some time to go ahead and do that, and then we'll step through that exercise. So any questions on what's represented there? Okay. Yeah, so take some time to go through and do that. So we'll say 2 or 3 minutes. And in particular, you're looking at calculating the number of sets. And then from there, you'll be able to get all the bits. Is this on then? Okay, it is on. Yeah. Yeah, and
so for example, yeah, you get the number of one. You don't need to turn this into minor numbers.
And you can note you can assume that the address size is 64 bits. So it's a 64-bit machine for when you're calculating the tag bits. Oh, and I guess. As a heads up, 2 to the 10 is the scaling factor for kilobytes. Who needs more time? Okay. Who needs more time? Okay. Let's do 1 more minute and then. Okay. All right. Let's step through this exercise. And so the first thing, because we're given the block size, it's really easy to calculate. It's straightforward to calculate the number of offset bits, right? Because we need to be able to address all 64 bytes. And so we could do. I'll just kind of scroll up here. We could do. In order to figure out what little b is going to be log base 2 of b. And so this is going to be 6. So any questions on how we got the number of offset bits? OK. And so the next thing that we can do is we can calculate the number of sets, or this is the number of ways is given to us, sorry. I'll highlight this. So the number of ways is given to us. So this is our E value. And so we could calculate the number of sets. So the number of sets is going to be the cache size divided by E, the number of ways times the block size. Does everybody see how I got that? Any questions on this? So that's going to give us our number of sets. And then we have to be a little careful here. So just to kind of be explicit about this. So 32 kilobytes is going to be our cache size, and then we're going to divide by our block size, which is 64 bytes times 8. And so one of the things that makes this really easy, I'll draw out this table so we can see it, is if we simply look at a kilobyte as 2 to the 10th, so this would be 32 times 2 to the 10th, and over 64 times 2 to the 3rd, and so then we can do the conversion for 32, and so 32 is 2 to the 5th times 10, and 64 is 2 to the 6th, and so then this would be 2 to the 15th divided by 2 to the 9th, and so the difference there is going to be 6, 2 to the 6th, and then 2 to the 6th is 64. So any questions on this? Pretty straightforward. And so the number of set bits, since we have a set size of 64, is going to be log base 2. Oops. It's going to be log base 2 of 64, which is 6, because 2 to the 6 is 64. Okay. So let's look at an example where we split or address into tag, index, and offset bits and step through that. So these are the calculations for the L2 and L3 caches. Those are the lower level caches in the hierarchy, but we'll focus on the L1 cache. And so we calculated the number of offset bits and the number of set bits, and the tag bits are just going to be the rest. So that's going to be 64 minus 12, which is going to be 52. So 52 tag bits here for the L1 cache. So any questions on that? Okay. So here's a sample address. And so the sample address is this number in hex. And so the question is, what part of this address represents the offset? And so it's going to be the last 6 bits. So it'll be these bits here, which is equivalent to this number. And so if one of the things to point out here is that it's really easy to do the conversion from hex to binary. So notice that we can simply split it up by nibble, and then do the binary conversion for each nibble. So this is the binary for 7, binary for 6, binary for 5, binary for 4, and binary for 3. And using that same strategy, it's really easy. I'll just do this on the next slide. So it comes really easy to do the conversion from our last 6 bits to the hex representation for those 6 bits by simply splitting it up into nibbles. And so I'll highlight this for us so that we can see it. So this would be hex for 7, and this is 2, and so the resulting hex is 027. And so our set bits are going to be all the things that remain. The next 6 bits, I need to be careful. So it would be the next 6 bits here. And we can do the same kind of breakup strategy. So this is our first part, that's going to be the nibble that corresponds to 5. And this is our second part, nibble that corresponds to 1. And so And this would be our sets. And the tag is going to be whatever is left, which is this portion, 3 and 4. So I'll highlight that. So any questions on how we're doing the split to determine, based on our address, the tag index and offset bits? So does anybody want to say, well, it's a 64-bit address, and there should be a bunch of trailing zeros? Yes, it's a 64-bit address, and there are a bunch of trailing, leading zeros, but we don't have to write those when we're representing it in hex. And so let's look at the next address. So for the next address, the offset bits are going to be the same, but the set bits are going to be larger. The L2 cache has more sets. And so it's going to be the next 10 bits, which are these. And so we could use the same nibble breakup strategy to determine the set index. So 5, 1, 1. And so that gives us a pretty clear, straightforward breakdown. And then the tag bits are going to be whatever is left. In this case, 3 onward. And so does anybody want to propose what for the L3 cache, what would be the set index for the address 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? So any proposals? Yep. So posing, actually I'll just highlight it because it's already highlighted on the slides. So here, and the conversion is pretty straightforward as well. So 5, 1, and then this one's interesting. It's D, and so you can go through this in hex. Actually, I'll just do, so it's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then A, B, C, D, 10, 11, 12, 13, and this is binary for 13, which corresponds to D. Okay, so any questions on how you go from the address to the tag, index, and offset? So there are a couple of mistypes. The first type is a compulsory miss. So this is where we go to the bookshelf, the slot was empty, so we have to go to the library. So these are when the cache is empty, the valid bits 0, so we have to go all the way to the cache. And the other two are a little bit more tricky and a little bit more nuanced to understand. So the second one is a conflict miss. And so this happens normally when the cache isn't big or flexible enough. So let's look at an example of conflict miss. So I'm going to draw two caches. The first one is going to be same, and they're going to be the same size. So the first one's going to have two sets, and the second one's going to be fully associative and only have one set. And then they're going to be memory addresses 0, 1, and 2. And we're going to say memory address 0 maps to set 0, memory address 1 maps to set 1, and memory address 2 maps to set 0. Any questions about the construction of these two cache designs? And so let's say that we have a memory access 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2. And so when we look at the cache here, we're going to have a bunch of misses. So first we'll load in 0 and 1, and then we'll kick 0 out to load in 2. When we're here, and then next time we'll kick 2 out to load in 0, and so we get all of these misses. If we had a different layout, fully associative cache, where we had 0, 1, and 2, and since it's fully associative and they're all in one set, all of them map to set 0. And so if we had accesses 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, the first time we would pull in block 0, 1 into the cache. And so we'd get a hit the next time. And then here, 2, instead of getting, we'd get a miss, but we'd pull in the next block, which is 2, 0. And so we'd get a hit on the 0 the next time. Any questions on this? And so when you're thinking of conflict misses, there's this kind of notion of flexibility associated with it. A capacity miss is a little different. So capacity miss is when the cache isn't big enough to hold all the values in the sequence. So you can imagine a case in which we have really poor, I'll draw this out for us. So if we had accesses 1, 2, 3, actually, I'll just do it like this, 0, 1, 2, 3, and we had a single fully associative cache, it was 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the first time we would load in 1, 2, and then when we get to 3, we'd get a miss, and then we'd have to load in 3, 4. And this wouldn't occur if we had something with a block size that was double that. So we could load in 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so these sets of accesses is normally called your working set. The set of memory instructions that you access over and over and over again. So if we made this cache just a little bigger, we wouldn't have the capacity misses that cause us to have to bring 3 and 4 into the cache. So any questions on this? And so when we do have these misses, we need to propose replacement policies. And so this is where we stopped last time. And so we had a two-way associative cache. And we had a miss on our last address for 64, and we needed to decide which one of these values we needed to replace. And so does anybody want to propose a strategy for this? Anyone want to propose like a strategy for making a decision about which cache block to evict? Yeah, least recently used. And so let's provide some intuition about why. So imagine that we had a temporal stream that looked like this. So these are our accesses. Time is going this way. This is time. And so we access memory address 1, 2, 2, 2, and then 3, 3, 3. And then 2, 2. So our cache would contain 1 and then 2. And then when we get here, the last one that we accessed was 2. So most likely, it would be probably better to drop 1. And so then we can keep 2 in the memory, in the cache. And then we could drop 3 in. And so we get hit, 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 hit. So if we have this notion of temporal locality, like because we used it recently, we want to keep it. And so we want to develop strategies that are kind of along those lines. And so LRU is one strategy with the idea of exploiting temporal locality in your stream. Question? Yeah.
Wouldn't we need to know the what we're accessing in the future to know that we're not going to need that one again?
Well, we don't know that we're not going to need that one again. We just assume that because the last thing that we accessed was the two, we say, okay, the one's further in the past, so let's forget about it and drop it. So, a good question. And so, what we can do is we can have some extra bits that will keep track of the way that was further, maybe more distant. Probably should come up with a more clear phrasing for that. But we'll see it in the example. So there are a bunch of strategies for doing this, not just least recently used. And so imagine if we have, let's just discuss least recently used a little bit more. So imagine if we have more ways in our cache. In this case, we have 0, 1, and 2 ways. How would we keep track of which one of these was least recently used? We couldn't use a simple bit where we say, okay, if 0 is least recently used, then the bit's going to be 0, and if 1 was least recently used, then the bit was going to be 1. But if we have more ways, we're going to have more creative strategies. You could have some kind of list, and then when 1 gets used, and then it would be 2, 0, 1, and so on. And so there are a number of permutations to this. And so the permutations, if there are 3 ways, it would be 3 times 2 times 1, or the number of ways factorial, and the way we represent our number of ways is e. And so e factorial give us the number of combinations for the order. And therefore, the number of bits that we would need is going to be log base 2 of e. And we'll take the ceiling of that. So if we come up with the best compression strategy for representing all of these permutations, then we would need at least log base e of those bits, the best that we could do. But there are other good approximations that use less bits, like e to 2e bits. With these strategies, you'll be guaranteed that you'll get at least the least recently used, but it won't be the perfect ordering. And another strategy is first in, first out. So if we look at our 3-block example from before, if I fill this block, then this block, then this block, then this one was the first in, so I'll kick it out. And if you think about this in context of our stream, it does obey that same kind of temporal locality. And to do that, we can simply have a counting circuit, and then that counting circuit will decide, we'll keep a counter, so this is at 1, then it's to 2, then it's to 3, so it keeps a counter for which way to evict. And finally, a final strategy is this notion of random, and so we just randomly select a block to evict, and it turns out that this doesn't do too bad. And some processors actually use this. So any questions on replacement policies?
Which one is best to use?
I don't know which one's the most popular. I don't know if you're counting, I don't know what, the most popular chip in the world is probably the MSP430 because it's a microcontroller chip. But I don't know what cache replacement strategy they use for their cache. Any other questions? And so let's go through this. Why don't you guys try this exercise, keeping track of the least recently used bit to represent the block that was least recently used, and going through and calculating which ones get evicted. And so we'll do 3 minutes. So 106. It's okay to like write it out. I didn't print out the stuff because I figured that it would be easier to. Maybe I should have printed it out this time, but it's okay to like write it out. Anybody want to propose a value for the first entry? Anybody want to propose a value for the first entry? Is it a miss? Hit? First one's a miss, right? What are the tag bits? We'll assume that we fill the ways left to right, lowest index to highest index. So what would the tag bits be? What type of miss is this?
Cold.
Yeah. So the tag bits is going to be all zeros. And then what memory locations are we going to pull in? Yeah, that's right. So we're going to pull in mem 0 through 3. So any questions on this? And what's our LRU bit going to be set to? 1. So I'll just kind of scroll down here. So our least recently used way is this one, because we just used 0. So any guesses for the second one? Or right ideas. It's the second one. Yep. Because it's already in the cache. And so, what about the third one? Yep. And what gets pulled in? This is kind of tricky. It's not really easy to read. So remember, A is 10. So what gets pulled in? I'll draw this out again for you so you can see. This is the bit 1, 0. So 0, 1 would be above it, 0, 0 would be above it, and 1, 1 would be below it. So what would get pulled in? Say again? Well, 0, 0, right? Last two are the offset bits, right? So it's going to be, this is 9 and 8. It's going to be 8. 8 to B, yeah. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, I thought I said A to B.
Yeah, 8
to B, okay, yeah. 8 to B, great. And this is a miss, and notice how we updated our least recently used bit. So now way zero, this way, was the least recently used. So what about this access? What about the next two axes? This one. Miss. Okay, so we missed. What set does it get brought into?
Zero.
Yep, and so what would we replace?
Way zero,
which is this one. And what happens to our least recently used bit? One. So we replace way zero. We update our tag, and we update our least recently used bit. So any questions on this? Okay. Great. What about this one? It's miss. And which one would we replace? Way one. Oh, it's kind of showing. way one, so we bring it in. And let me make sure. Oh, there's an error on the slides. We missed one. So we missed this miss that goes into index one, or not an error, but an oversight on my part. And so I have this tag. And it's going to be C, so it's going to have, and it's 0, 0, so it's going to be C, D, and then, so 0, 0, 1, and I guess 1 and 2, or E and F, sorry, C, D, E, and F. And then for the last miss, and that updates that way. Okay, so now we're here. Sorry about getting lost there. That was my bad. So what about this one? Is this a hit? Because the tag matches, and it's at index 0, and it's here, so offset's 11, so hit. Great. So far we've talked about a policy of just reading from the cache. Is this on?
Now it's on.
Oh, okay.
Did you explain why for 21 we overwrote 0, 0, but for 0, C we overwrote 1, 0?
Okay. Are you on this side?
Yes.
Okay. For 21, just make sure I understand your question. For this 21, and which one are we comparing it to?
We put it in set 0, value 0.
Yep.
But for 0, C, we put it in set 1, value 0.
So remember, we're keeping track of which set to replace by looking at our least recently used bit. And so if you look at the least recently used bit, for the first replacement here, it was 0. And then for the next replacement that you were referring to, it was 1. And so that's why we pick, that's how we make the decision about which way to replace. Is that clear?
Yes.
And was it one where we were making, did I not get that? Like, are you referring to 21 and what's your other one?
Oh, 0, C.
21 and 0C. Oh, these index bits are different as well. I thought you were referring to 21 and I don't remember which other one we picked for a different way. 0, 02. Yeah, 21 and 0 and 0C have different index bits, so they get mapped to different locations.
All of our misses in this exercise, could you mention what type of miss they are?
Yes, of course. So I'll have to kind of go through each miss individually. Is there a miss in particular that you're interested in?
I guess sort of with the, I guess the 0C miss.
The 0C miss. This one? This one?
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to build it back up in my brain, but we can go through it. So the 0C miss was this one, where we're bringing in, what's the state of the memory? We're dropping something in at index 1. So that's here. So that's a cold. Is there another one that you, is there something specific, more conceptual that you're looking for that I can answer directly?
Yeah, I guess, that kind of answered the question where if we're looking at different sets in general, it would be the first one in a set. Is it cold miss?
Yes, because the set would be, the first one in an empty set.
Right.
Yeah, if the set's empty, it's going to be cold.
Okay.
If the cache is full and you replace something in a full set, it could be a conflict miss.
Okay.
And it's most likely a conflict miss. Do you want to say anything else to
a
be?
Anytime you access something for the first time is a cold miss.
But I think the distinction, the nuance of this question is that given that the cache is full and you replace something in a particular set, and that both ways in that set are full, is it a conflict or capacity miss? Is that your question?
I was looking for the cold miss.
The cold miss, okay. Okay, cool. All right, great. So we have, so far we've looked at strategies for just reading from these caches. And so now we'll try to explore strategies for writing to a particular cache. And so the first strategy is called write through. And so this is one of the simplest strategies. So does anybody have a guess about how we would design this, as the name kind of suggests? What would be the policy that would guarantee consistency between our cache and our memory, particularly when we do writes? Yeah, exactly. So that's the concept of write-through. So the idea with write-through is that as soon as it's written to the cache, so in this case, we're writing to address ABC, and so we're writing the value 10 to ABC. As soon as it's changed in the cache, as soon as we update F to 10, we take that value and we write it to the location ABCD in main memory of 10. And so main memory would update, and so this would be 10. And so we get consistency this way. Going to main memory and writing might take some time. And so there are some alternate strategies. Can anybody think about what might be an alternate strategy?
So for the write path, the idea is that you can mark things that need to have that.
Yeah, so the kind of second design choice is that, which is called write back, is that you take whatever is in your bookshelf, if you modify it, you mark it as dirty or modified, meaning that that value is dirty because it's inconsistent with memory. And then whenever you do reads to that address, you write through to memory, or write back to memory. And so here, we'll look at an example of that in detail. And so say we make a change here to address ABCD, and we're writing the value 10. We write that value to the cache, and then we set a bit in that address called a dirty bit, and we set that to 1. And so this is telling us explicitly, sorry, did not mean to do that, telling us explicitly that this address in the cache is inconsistent with the address in memory here. Notice that the values are different. The cache is in some way dirty. And so when we do a read from that memory address, or read from anything that evicts from that position in the cache, we would simply pull in, write that value to memory. So we write ABC to memory to ensure consistency. And then we would do a read of 42. Actually, I have a picture of this, so I don't draw a bunch of arrows. Do a read from the address that mapped to the same location in the cache, and then our CPU would have that value. So if we're ever replacing that value in the cache, I might have not been careful there. If when we're replacing that value in the cache, for example, if we have a block that maps directly to that shared block, we have to, if we're ever evicting something from the cache, we make sure to go to main memory, read, write the value to main memory to ensure that it's consistent, and then do our read from main memory to the position that we were evicting from our cache. So any questions on this? And so here, this is an example of the dirty bit getting added. And so we've changed the memory value, one of the memory values, at this particular index in the cache. And so we set a bit to say, oh, this is different. This is different from memory, so we'll remember it, and we can write it through. So there are some strategies. Say, for example, in this case, we only modified, instead of modifying both of these memory values, we only modified the first one. How would we then go ahead and decide how to do our write through? Or how decide how to make memory consistent with our cache? So there are a couple strategies. Does everybody understand the problem? Say this was a section of an array, and I updated this section of the array, but not this one. And so now only this part of my block is inconsistent. And so how would I go about updating that? So there are two strategies. The first one's called write allocate. So if we're first one's called write allocate. So this says, okay, you wanted to write this block in memory. What we'll do is we'll bring that whole block into the cache. If it's a 64 kilobyte block and you're only writing 4 kilobytes of it, we'll bring all 64 bits into the cache. And then we'll let you modify this particular block and keep all of the other blocks in the cache the same. And somebody said, well, maybe that's not the best strategy. Why not have, if you want to just write one small part of a block, have another strategy called write no allocate, where you bypass the cache with your write and go straight to main memory and update only the bytes in main memory that you want to write. And so this is guessing that we're not going to read that written value soon. So we can just let it use the long amount of time that it takes to write main memory and circumvent the cache. And so next we'll look at a detailed example of write allocate with the dirty bit and with our least recently used strategy. So any questions on these two? Okay. And so here's our memory. And so we're going to be writing the value 15, FFF. FFF into address 04. And so for 04, the index bit's going to be 0 and the tag bit's going to be 1. And so that's going to be here. And so we need to make a decision about what we evict from the cache. And so what are we going to kick out? Based on the value of LRU.
You would want it to get out from the right one.
Yeah, from way one. And so we're going to kick out the least recently used block. And remember, we're using a write allocate strategy. And we're using it with write back. So because we're kicking out this block, we need to go and write this to memory. So we'll set the dirty bit to 0 and write it all the way to memory. So write back that old block. And finally, we copy in. I wish I could kind of point and scroll at the same time on this. And then we pull in our value FFF into our location. Okay. Is there something structurally wrong here with the slides? So we find the least recently used block. We write back the old block, which is 0FF. And then we pull in, yeah, so this is right. I'm not sure what this slide is for. OK, so in order to make writes faster, we have a write buffer that's associated with the cache. And these write buffers are normally single cycle, so they're quick. And so instead of waiting for all of the time to write to RAM, we can simply write to this write buffer and move on. And as long as this buffer is not full, we never have to wait all that time for the cache to write all the way to RAM. Okay, so let's look at some organizations of different caches in terms of ways and associativities. And how much speed up we get in terms of miss rates. So miss rates, the given the number of percentage of accesses to our cache, what percentage of them is a miss? And so here, you can see as we increase the cache size, our miss rate goes down drastically because now the cache can hold practically all of our working set. And in particular, there's a particular configuration of the cache that looks really interesting that kind of has the lowest miss rate. And so here we have this 8-way associative cache, where every time we hash something, we have an extra spot for it. And then we have a fully associative cache. And so if you remember from our earlier discussion, the fully associative cache has these tag bits with all of this comparison associated with it. And even though we get this speed up by adding associativity and size, here, by going only to a fully associative cache, we only get a small increase. And normally, as you make the cache bigger, the amount, the how long you have to wait for the values to settle is a lot longer. So it's slower the larger it is. And the more gates it has in the cache, also the slower it is. And so fully associative caches tend to be more complex. And so they have more gates. And so even though we get a little bit of speed up in, or reduce in the miss rate, the cache is overall slower. And so normally you get a lot of the best performance from an 8-way cache. Oh, I failed to mention something. I think Professor Reese mentioned the last time, but I'll just make sure that we were kind of clear. So the idea of a benchmark is that somebody writes a program to run on your processor that says, here's going to be my processor's performance on these typical programs, and this is how you measure whether or not you have a good or bad processor. And so these are benchmark performance numbers here. And they're measured not on a physical processor, but on something that simulates that cache structure. So it's not that they're like measuring exact hits in this cache, it's measured in simulation. Okay. And so there's some key metrics to kind of look at when you're thinking about a cache. And so this is the hit time, the time to look up and find a value in the cache. So you normally want this to be close to your cycle time. Typically one cycle. On more modern processors, it's a little bit more. And then miss rate, this is going to be the proportion, the percentage of misses that you have for accesses. The miss penalty is going to be the time that you pay if you have a miss to go all the way to memory and pull the value and get it back. And then the miss time is going to be the time that it takes to read cache, which is your hit time, plus the time to pay the miss penalty. So I hit the cache, it's empty, I want to pull in something from memory. This will be your hit time plus your miss penalty. And so there's also another metric for measuring caches called the average memory access time. And so this is saying, given all the memory accesses that you see in one of these benchmarks, what was the average time to grab something from memory? And so this is going to be your hit time plus the percent, your hit time plus the percentage of time that you pay this miss penalty. So that's your miss rate times your miss penalty. So how often do you pay this miss penalty, and how often do you have a particular hit time? So this would be your average memory access time for a given cache configuration. And so it's possible if you can write any type of benchmark to make a cache look bad. And so here's an example of a benchmark that would do that. So I have some cache, regardless of its size, number of sets S, and I write something that accesses enough blocks to fill the entire cache. After I fill the entire cache, I go ahead and access an additional block that replaces something. So I replace this block with something new, and then I try to access the block that I replaced, and I keep doing that over and over and over again. And because this program has no temporal locality, you have a very, very high miss rate. And so you just made this cache look really, really bad. And this is not typical of programs. So these benchmarks are kind of designed to replicate typical program behavior. And so it's possible to kind of optimize these caches for different mistypes. And so if we increase the cache size, we're going to have fewer capacity misses. So remember that example of 1, 2, 3, 4. If we have a block size of 4, that's the size of our working sets, then we're going to have fewer misses. We also have fewer conflicts misses, where things are kind of hashing to the same set. If we increase associativity, we're also going to decrease conflict misses, because when something hashes to the same set, we can simply pop over to the next set. And if we increase block size, this one's not super intuitive, we reduce compulsory misses. And so the reason for this is that as we increase block sizes, we pull in more data per access. And so something that would have been a cold miss before, if we get a large number of sets, is now lessened because we can pull in large chunks and then access those subsequent chunks afterwards. But we have more conflict misses because we're putting everything in a same set. So any questions on this? Whoops, yeah.
If you're increasing block size, aren't you by extension increasing cache size?
No. Imagine the trade-off that we looked at before, where we have this trade-off between temporal and spatial locality. So if we have a block size of 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, we could turn that into a two-set cache with block sizes of 2. Is this clear?
Yep.
And so the first one, we'll get fewer compulsory misses because we'll pull in more stuff, but we'll have higher conflict misses because everything's going to one set. Yeah, so the idea with the general idea, there's a nuance to conflict misses, but the general idea to conflict misses is that if something's hashing to the same set, you have a conflict miss. Okay. So let's go ahead and look at this program, and then try to calculate the number of cache misses that occur when this runs. So here's our sample program. The idea is to go through this program and calculate the number of cache misses that you get when this runs. So some things to remember that might have slipped our mind. We're going to assume that this whole array is in memory and everything else is in registers. And an integer is 4 bytes long. And so here's your direct map cache, and it has 16 blocks. And so you can kind of start thinking about that. Also, I'll point something out, that the array size and the cache size. So this array is too big to fit in the cache all by itself. So I'll give you like 3 minutes, and then we'll think about a solution to this. Maybe I'll clear this because I've communicated it. So. You might need paper, like pen and paper, to like think through this. And you can assume that the array is laid out like contiguously in memory, each byte. It's a single dimensional array, so that's a valid assumption. It's not like split, it's contiguous. And when you pull in blocks, it's contiguous. And you can assume that when you pull in the blocks, it's pulled in. You know, this, even though this doesn't matter, it's pulled in a whole chunk. There's no like splitting across blocks. So any ideas? Any ideas? Any thoughts? Okay, so let's start maybe thinking about this visually. Maybe some visual clues will help. So if we look at this array, it's going to be 0 to 124 ints. And each int is going to be 4 bytes. So what's our block size?
16 bytes.
16 bytes. So how many... how many ints are held in a block?
Four.
So if I bring in 0, 0, 0, so 0, 1, 2, 3, for each block, how many hits am I going to have? How many misses? So this is int 0, int 1, int 2, int 3 from my previous array. So this is a subset of my previous array. Three hits, one miss. And it's direct mapped, right? So what does that mean? One block per set. And so how many sets do I have in this cache? So my cache size is going to be my blocks times the number of sets. So if I divide my cache size by my block size, and so my cache size is 2k, so 2 times 2 to the 10th, divided by my block size, which is 64, And 64 is 2 to the 6th. So it's going to be, did I make a mistake there?
Is it 16, sorry.
I was like, I thought I made a mistake there. 16. 16 is going to be 2 to the 4th. And so this will be 2 to the 11th over 2 to the 4th. And so 2 to the 7th blocks. I'm going to clear this so we have space. So they're 2 to the 7th blocks. So 2 to the 7th blocks make up my cache. And my cache is 2k, but my array is 4k. So I need twice as many blocks to hold all of them. Right? But my cache only has 2 to the 7th. 2 to the 7th times 2 is 2 to the 8th. That's how many I need. So I'm going to have to load in new values every time. And so for every single block access, I'm going to have one miss and three hits. So the number of misses that I have is 2 to the 8th. Does this make sense? Ask questions if you're lost.
Doesn't that only count cold misses?
Cold misses. So every miss is going to be cold. So they're 2 to the 7th blocks in the cache. Right, so that's 2k of space, but my array is 4k in size. So after I bring in my first half of my array, then when it's time to bring in the next half of the array to do the other accesses, they're going to have to swap things out. So it's, well, a conflict miss in that case. Conflict.
It's a cold miss.
Okay.
First time you access it, it's a
cold miss. But he's...
It's not a miss because... They have mapped to the same set.
Yes.
It's not why it missed. It missed because we never accessed it before.
Yeah. Not because we didn't have a spot for it in the cache. Thank you for the clarification, Charles. Professor Reese. any other questions? Yeah.
So is it cold miss when you never access that address, or is it when the cache is currently empty at that address?
When you've never accessed that address in memory. Any other questions? So do we see how we did this? Is this clear?
How you calculated how many blocks there are.
How many blocks? So the number, it's a direct map cache, which means there's only one bookshelf, only one way. And so the size of our cache is gonna be the number of blocks times the number of sets. And the sets tells us, the block size sends the number of sets. And the sets tells us, because it's direct mapped, how many blocks there are. So if we take our cache size and we divide it by our blocks, then we know how many blocks we need to make up that capacity, that 4K. Any other questions? Say again? Yes. So I did that earlier, but I can clear it and do it again. So so here's our formula for capacity. And so we have a cache that is 2k. So 2k is simply 2 times 2 to the 10th, where k is 2 to the 10th. So this is going to be 2 to the 11th. Whoops, 2 to the 11th. And then our block size is 16, right? Which is the same thing as 2 to the 4th times the number of sets. And so the number of sets is going to be the capacity divided by the block size. And so this is going to be 2 to the 11th time over divided by 2 to the 4th, which is going to be 2 to the 7th. So plug in, okay. Every access is a miss.
Don't you when you...
Well, every block, every time you bring a... The reason that you're bringing a block in is a miss. So there's one miss per block with three hits per block. Okay. Thank you for making me clarify.
That's unrelated to the size of our cache, right?
The number of misses?
Yeah.
It depends. So if we had a cache that was
completely fully associative, then we could pull in all of the first half of their array, and then we have hit for the first pull, and then every other access in that fully associative set, we would get a hit. So the size of the cache does matter, because in that case we have two misses.
But in this situation, say if they changed it to one, maybe instead of two, that would, it would still have two.
Yes, we would still have two instead of eight, yes, misses, yes. Yes, because we pull in one section, and then we still have to pull in the next section, and so on. Yes. So, could we? So let's see if we can do this one. How many misses do we have now? And then we'll call it here. Is it more? Is it less? Yeah, because it's only up to half the. For the first one, we're bringing it in for all the odd numbers. Well, actually, let me make sure I'm careful on this one. So, for the first one, I'll just think through this. For the first one, we're going to look at all the odd numbers. So we're here. So 0, 1, 2, 3. And so we have two hits per block. And yes, so it's the same because we pull in, as we're pulling in our first block, 0, 1, 2, 3. Yep. So for every block that we access in this series, we would have let me be really careful about this. Yes, it is the same. I'm confusing myself, but it is the same. Yeah.
Wouldn't there only be one hit each block pull in, since you pull in?
No, you're pulling in odd numbers.
But
so zero.
Doesn't it not know that you only care about the odd numbers? Like it still pulls in even and odd numbers and things that exist now.
It's pulling in even and odd. One more time.
So I mean, like in the first for loop,
yep.
First number of it pull in was array index 0. The next one it would access is array index 2.
No, yes. Array index 0, array index 2.
So it only actually accepts one.
Let me just make sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll pick up on it next time. I'll double check the example.
Yes, there are only two misses.
I'm connect to, like, independent of our machines. You know what I mean? Like, you have a server, you want to go to the East.
What? You go to East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.